Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
For our work segment, or our non-work segment, as the case may be, we've got Beth Koblenner, Takeaway Work contributor, here in the studio. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
Also, Deanna Nairns is a graduate in October with a master's in film studies, also working as a baker. Because why, Deanna?
Well, I haven't been able to find work in my field.
Even though you are a master, right? All right. Now, during recessions, it is the case that people go back to school to upgrade their resume, to get training that they hope will be useful in the job market. And a conversation that's been started on our website really forces the issue, is an advanced degree worth the money you spend? Rebecca on Facebook says, when starting a career in mental health counseling, expressive arts therapy at 46, a master's degree was essential. My English art bachelor's degree qualified me for nothing. Meanwhile, Pam from Fort Lauderdale writes on our site, takeaway.org, for me, it was the best decision of my life, without which I would not have a career. I'm an academic librarian, and a master's is required. The master's is the new bachelor's nowadays, I'm afraid, a must-have. Deanna, how do you respond to that?
Well, I have to say that I agree, kind of wholeheartedly. I started off with my bachelor's, and I had a hiatus in between my bachelor's and then going back to do my master's. And I definitely felt that in that time period, my bachelor's had degree had sort of expired in a way. And I did not feel that I was prepared, and I also felt that employers weren't looking at me because I did not have that master's degree.
How much did it cost you to get the master's degree?
Close to, let's see, $28,000.
$28,000. And did you pay cash? Are you still paying off loans, that sort of thing?
It's student loans, and I'll be paying them off for at least a good next 30 to 40 years.
And I'm sure you're a great baker, right, Deanna?
Yes, I'm an amazing baker at this point.
All right, Beth Koblenner, what are the statistics here? A lot of people with a well-meaning sort of attempt to upgrade their skills, to learn something new,
right.
To go into something that they're really interested in, spend money like Deanna did,
right.
And now they're, you know, baking for a living.
Right. Well, I think she's going to have, you know, bake a lot of muffins to pay off that money, you know, for 30 years. That's talking a lot about a lot of muffins or cookies. But if you're looking at people who are getting their PhD in the humanities right now, English, philosophy, history, they incur an average debt of $23,000. That isn't, you know, as astonishing high as some figures we've heard within the academic world. But the odds are that you're going to get a job in an academic field are pretty slim. You know, I looked around and found that English PhD grads have only a 40 to 50% chance of getting a tenure track job in academia for the 3 years after they get out of graduation. So you consider the fact that you're working for a degree for 6, 7, 8 years to get a PhD, and those are pretty bad odds, only 40 to 50% chance to get that job that you really want. And even if you're looking for a quote-unquote more practical degree, say journalism, something that we all may or may not have considered, that's something where a year in journalism school could be $30,000. If you go for 2 years, then say you pay a third of it out of your pocket, but you'll still end up with about a monthly fee of $500 a month that you'd be paying off for 10 years. And the salary you'd need for that is about $56,000 to pay those payments, but the average journalist salary is only $34,000.
If you can even find a job in
journalism. If you could even find a job, exactly, because that's the thing that right now, I mean, we have two things going on. One is the immediacy of people, the trouble people are having finding jobs.
Right, but that's everybody, whether they have a degree or they don't have a degree.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I question the notion, I mean, every field is specific, but I question the notion that you need now the next level of degree to get a job, because people can't find jobs no matter what kinds of degrees they have. And I think there's some sense that I'm getting that people are going back to school, you know, even though they know they're going to end up, say, out of journalism school with lots and lots, tens of thousands of dollars in debt. I don't think that will necessarily get them that dream journalism job, but it's just sort of a way station, a way to sort of stay in school, continue to be a perpetual student for a few years, hoping they'll ride it out and the jobs will come back. But when the jobs come back, they will have tens of thousands of dollars more debt.
But I'm not sure. I question the whole premise that you can kind of quantify the value of that degree. I mean, for example, in my case, I have a master's degree. It is in music and it's in opera. I need that master's degree to do professional opera. However, that's not how I'm working.
But it's not.
It's not. That obviously, that's not my full-time job. That is my part-time job.
So,
however,
but that's an argument.
No. Let me finish. Which is that there are intangible benefits. A, I made connections during my time at the University of Michigan. We have no idea. I mean, my job in journalism is directly related to my degree in music. Mm-hmm. I got a job in journalism because I became a classical music host, and that led to greater things. Mm-hmm. My degree I consider to be absolutely worth it, just in terms of the opportunities it opened for me, the education that I got. It made me a better and more informed and educated person. And again, I made connections that can't be quantified.
Mm-hmm. Right. Although you could have been an undergraduate music major, perhaps. That
I was an undergraduate music major, and that wasn't working for me.
That wasn't working. So
well, Deanna, let's get in your head a little bit here. Deanna Nairns graduated in October, a master's in film study. You're considering a doctorate?
Just take
me inside your mind how you decide whether you're going to do something like this.
Well, when I went to go for my master's, I felt that it was extremely necessary because I had been out of school for a while. I wanted to kind of get back into the mindset of doing research, analysis, and my master's program definitely prepared me for this. Once I returned to New York, I did my master's at the University of Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Once I returned to New York, I've spent the past 7 or 8 months applying for jobs and mostly internships, volunteer positions, which are even just as hard, it seems, to attain as regular employment. And I guess that's where I'm starting to realize that, you know, the people that I am competing with do hold masters or do hold PhDs.
So you kind of don't have a choice, but do you worry that the academic world is delivering this illusion of a safe sort of ivory tower where you can wait out this jungle out here called the job market?
It's such a strange dichotomy between what people are looking for and how far you go as an individual for your education and whether or not in the end that matters, you know. And I think that what the previous woman was talking about as far as making contacts is a part of that, you know, like throwing yourself into that world and making contacts and then continuing with your education in some type of way. It just seems like these things sort of go strangely hand in hand.
Deanna Nairns graduated in October with a MA in film studies, considering a PhD. Good luck to you, Deanna.
Thank you.
Final advice, Beth Kobliner, before we go?
Well, I think before you make these decisions, I think you have to be a little bit clearer about, you know, not just Deanna, but everybody, about how much you're going to be paying. I mean, if you're going to end out of grad school with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and it's still amorphous whether you're going to be able to get a job in the field that you're studying, realize, you know, that's going to be very, very expensive.
Well, I think it's good for the higher education industry.
It's great.
Sure.
But even in the fields like law school and medical school, which we thought were a no-brainer.
Right. It's a cost-benefit analysis. Beth Kobliner does the best cost-benefit analysis in the business. Takeaway Work Contributor. Thanks so much.
And she's got a blog post at our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headley.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.